101, a version 1 podcast.
I'd like to welcome Ronan Percival to the 101 podcast. Welcome today, Ronan.
Thanks for having me, Roisin. Looking forward to chat.
It's been a long awaited chat now. I've been very interested in the forest story for the last couple of years. Can you give me a background of how you started Forest Off? What gave you the idea and how did you get to where you are today?
So there's been a few learnings there. It started out as a text message idea. And the idea was to help small businesses with no-shows. So people not turning up for an appointment. So it was for any small business. And the idea was, which doesn't sound that innovative today, but there was nobody doing it at the time. So send out appointment reminders by text. And you cut down no-shows by anywhere from 50 to 70% based on the kind of research we did at the time. And so we took that idea out and tried to get customers for it. And that was how far I started. And after about a year, we had about 20 customers. So we had like a dentist, doctors, a cherry picker company, a restaurant and a salon and a load of other businesses. But they were all different. And what was happening was we weren't doing enough for any of them for them to want to refer on the product. Like it was helping them with no-shows, but it wasn't doing anything else in their business. And all those businesses are different. Like, and that was the first realization that, you know, in order to solve a problem for a business, you kind of need to do more than just solve one problem. When you're doing a computer system, you kind of need to do maybe their whole workflow. And so I ended up working in a salon for about 6 months as a receptionist, and which is where we got to understand the salon industry and see all these other problems and opportunities that there were to solve. And so it took about nearly 2 years from starting the company to actually decide we're helping salons grow their business and manage their business.
And what would you say was the most kind of fundamental moment for you in terms of kind of going from the salon point of view to progressing the idea fully? Did it move quickly for you? Was it something that kind of was gradual? Was there a very big moment, aha moment, or?
It was definitely very gradual. So we started off bit by bit. We were very young, so we didn't really understand how to do business or anything like that, or how to raise money or do any of those kind of things. So it was bit by bit. So there was those first 2 years they were saying, then we knew we wanted to help salons. And I'd worked in a salon, and at that stage, I'd met a lot of salon owners. So we knew this was a big opportunity. So we really started to help, like, how can we help salons grow their business overall? So cut down on no-shows through appointments, but also being able to send marketing campaigns by text and email, do their online booking. And so that was the initial kind of concept. And in Ireland, we grew over another couple of years, we grew to maybe 400 salons in Ireland using it. So we're doing quite well. Still a small company, maybe 7 or 8 in the company. And then the recession kicked in 2008. And it was at that point then that our existing customers were just like, you know what Ireland was like back then. And it wasn't, salons weren't going out of business because people still needed to go to salons, but they were just like slashing their costs. And they were just kind of going, we'll keep using you, but we're only going to pay you half, take it or leave it. And so we had to, you know, we needed to really grow the company. So I actually moved to the UK in 2008, and I lived in the UK in London for 4 years, and built up the company over there, starting out just by going door to door. And then, you know, we got momentum, and then over time started to build out a team over there selling the product. And we built it up then, whereas today we're number one provider of salon software in Ireland and the UK, about 5,500 customers, and starting to really grow now in other countries like the US and Germany.
Where would you say you have your sights set the most right now?
So we have a 3-year goal to get to 12,000 salons, and considering it took us about 11 years to get the first 1,000, so just put that in a bit of perspective. But and the idea would be to focus that on the English speaking world and the German speaking world, rather than trying to just do it in lots of different countries, because if we can focus it in on particular geographies, we get a lot more bang for our buck, a lot more scale, a lot more word of mouth happening. And then there's all our marketing we do around it, all the education support and everything like that. So we're focusing on those places. And then what we would like to do ultimately is have a platform. So the software right now helps them grow their business, gets their clients back in more often. You know, we provide apps now and lots of other things as well, do all their SEO and managing their online reviews. And there's lots of different marketing things that we do for a salon. So, but we'd like to be able to provide a platform where other people would build on that to bring other innovations to salons that we can't do on our own. So if we focus on marketing, what about all the other things from accounting to HR to, you know, lots of other things that salons need to do, that other people build apps on the platform and giving them access to those tools. And that's something that doesn't exist at the moment for salons. But the salon industry is huge. Like, there's about 4 million salons around the world. It's about 60 million people working in salons. There's another 40 million working in companies that sell into salons. So about 100 million people working in the industry. It's like massive. You know, it's one of the biggest industries in the world.
Huge opportunity for florists to massive, grow.
But it's not, it's so fragmented. 95% of salons are owner operated. It's just like a massive cottage industry. So the idea of a platform where a single site salon can get access to all the best tools that normally are reserved for if you work for a big company or for a chain of salons or you work for a big company, you get access to all these things that usually a small salon isn't going to get access to.
So you're taking, they're really benefiting from the learning of scale.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How we can get that back, you know, get all those innovations back into salons or make it easier that they can get access to them.
I suppose in terms of scaling your platform to date, in terms of technology and driving innovation, what has been the biggest impact on, you know, your IT teams, or how have you continued to drive innovation from when you were a small startup to now? I think you'd mentioned that you had a product team start.
Yeah. So at the beginning, I suppose I was probably the product person. I came up with the ideas and the designs of what it should look like without any formal training around that. I would just do it. I'd be out with salons, hear problems and kind of come up with solutions. And then I worked with two guys in dev and we would build it. And that was the entire process for the company for many years. One of the problems with that was we weren't necessarily building tools in the right way. And so they didn't scale very well. It worked really well to solve the problem. And then once you had 100 salons using it, it would start to fall over. So we made two, I think, big leaps in Forest over the, you know, the history of the company. One was to go from that kind of small little team building it together to a proper dev culture, like proper dev and DevOps culture. Where we moved everything onto AWS. This was around 2010, 2011. And, you know, started working in sprints and having a proper team to build stuff. And then the second thing that kind of took us to a totally new level was about 3.5 years ago when we actually created a product group within Forest. Because up until that point, it was still, you know, problems coming in and we'd solve them. The dev would solve them directly or... sales would have opportunities and we would kind of go, right, if we did this feature, we'd make a lot of money and we'd implement it or we'd design it off the bat, but nothing kind of was fitting together. And we didn't do very much research around how many people wanted this or, you know, are we definitely working on the problem that most people have as opposed to just a nice problem.
And what would you say has kind of surprised you the most from, I suppose, transitioning into having a full product team and having such a thorough process now from going from being an entrepreneur coming up with the ideas to having full teams around the product?
The problem is now is just the amount of ideas. The challenge now isn't so much trying to identify whether this particular feature idea is a good one or not. I think we're much better knowing this is a good feature. It's going to impact this many customers. And therefore, it's something worthwhile doing. But you're going to have then 7 or 8 of these ideas sitting there, well thought through with mock-ups and prototypes and everything. You can't do them all. You can only take on one at a time or maybe two at a time. So which ones do you take up? And that sometimes that relates back more to what's our strategy? What are we trying to achieve? If we do this product, will it allow us do what we're saying we're going to do? But if we don't do this, will we have higher churn? So there's things that we have to balance. And they're champagne problems because compared to what we had before, but they're still the impact from choosing the wrong one could be massive in 2 or 3 years' time, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely makes sense. No. We should chat about your biggest impact on maybe customers in terms of making a real difference to their business. And then also, I think you're going to share kind of an interesting customer story with us as well.
So one of the things we do in Forest is for those 5,500 salons, we process something like 6 million appointments a month on the platform. So that would be people booking to their mobile, booking over the phone, being just keyed in at the desk or on the web or whatever. And of those 6 million, something like 800,000 are booked either through an app or online. And what's really interesting to us was when they pay that online, they use a credit card. But when they do it offline or on the phone, it's without a credit card. And so two facts out of this, that are stats out of this, which are interesting. One is if they book it online and they use a credit card, the no-show rate is 3%. But if they book it in person or over the phone, the no-show rate is 6%. So that's fairly logical, but it's still quite a big impact for a salon owner, because if she has 100 appointments in the week and she loses six of them, that's probably about £200 to £500 that she loses. Do you know what I mean? And if she loses it now, that person's not coming back in the future as well. So you're losing quite a lot of money, like upwards of maybe 20 or 30 grand a year for a small business, which is massive, right?
That is huge.
Yeah, so that's the kind of impact you can have doing that. That's a logical one. But the bit that was illogical to us, but is true based on the data on tens of thousands of instances where this has happened, is that if you don't turn up for the appointment, the salon can charge the person through the software, right? So if you don't turn up to the appointment and haven't let them know within 24 hours, your card is on file and you can be charged. So if I ask you this, Roisin, but do you think if I charged your card for not turning up, are you more or less likely to come back to the salon in the future?
I think I'd say my quick fire answer would be no, but then my heart would say it's probably my own fault for not showing up to the appointment.
So, I
would probably say no.
Yeah, you say, yeah, it's less, we thought the same, obviously if you charge them, they're not going to come back. Mm. And what we were saying to clients was, but that's fine, because look, the person probably wasn't going to come back anyway. They're a bad client, effectively, but it's better to have the policy in place because it means that you have 3% no-show rate instead of a 6% no-show rate for the odd client that you have to charge, whatever. It turns out that of everybody that's charged a no-show, 50% of people who are charged for a no-show actually come back and rebook, but only 30% of people who aren't charged for a no-show come back and rebook. So you are more likely to come back if you're charged, like significantly more likely. And we have this, over tens of thousands of no-show charges. So it's kind of, that was pretty interesting to find out.
That is very interesting. Mm. I wouldn't have guessed that.
And salons can be afraid of implementing things like this because they're such a strong relationship with their customers. Small business, they know all their customers. So they're afraid to do things that are in their interest. So it can be interesting to show them then, the data actually says, your relationship with your customer is going to be better if you do this. So that obviously is really cool to be able to share with them.
Especially operating at scale with the amount of market share that you have in Ireland and the UK,
you can
demonstrate it across all the data points.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And do you have any interesting stories from us in terms of how Forest has affected people across the world, maybe?
Our main form of marketing for Forest is through content marketing. I think this is where we initially got into contact. And so we would have quite a big podcast. We have 250 episodes now in on the Salon Owner podcast. And whereas business ideas around growing a salon business comes out once a week. And that's, it's got about 25,000 people listening to that every month. So that mightn't sound big in terms of a mainstream podcast, but considering that every single listener is probably a salon owner, it's really a huge reach in terms of that demographic. And we also then have a blog, which is a bit bigger than that, but similar again, only salon owners would read it. And we do events and things like that. But we got this amazing email last week from a prisoner in a prison in Illinois, and he'd gone to prison for, I don't think he went into exactly what he'd done, but something probably not very good, and he'd been in prison for a good few years, and he trained up as a hairdresser while he was in prison. And one of the things that he said to us was that he'd been reading our blog and listening to our podcast for the last 2 years, and that he'd now feeling ready to open his own salon when he left prison, when he got out, and he was basing it around loads of the stuff that we basically helped in the blog and the podcast, and that was pretty cool.
What would you say the biggest difference is that Forest makes in the salon industry, and how do you kind of continue to stay ahead of the curve as you grow and you have really ambitious goals for Forest?
I think what we do is between both the content and the product itself and using it, we have in some ways drag these salons that are very manual like analog way of doing business, you know, into the 21st century. So all like the actual work, what they're doing with the customer in terms of making them feel good or look good or whatever, like that work is still physical work, but how they run their business, how they grow their business, how they manage their business, all that stuff that should now be digital to be so much less time for them to do. That's really what we do. So we free up a huge amount of their time and then help them get a lot more customers. Does that make sense?
No, it definitely makes sense.
It's like, it's innovative in that, it's innovative in that lots of those little, those ideas are new ideas. And without the product, you're going to be at a real disadvantage, but it's not, I don't think it's disruptive. Like, let's say Uber is disruptive in that there's taxis exist and Uber comes along and anyone can be a taxi. Like, that's the kind of disruptive technology, I would say.
What is Forest doing from a technology perspective to future-proof the platform and to scale the platform?
Yeah. So what I would say is, like, at the currently we're undergoing a big rewrite of the front end of the platform. So we've rewritten the front end completely about 5 times in the product's life, and we've rewritten the back end about 3 times. So you've got to always be, if you never rewrite like the front end or the back end, after about 10 years, you're going to be so out of date, it's almost impossible to rewrite it. And it becomes such a big problem that most people try to avoid doing that. And you see that happening to tech companies all the time. There's just so much tech debt that it's not worthwhile doing it, and they sell on the company or whatever it is. You've got to redo that all the time. So we're currently, I think the front end was completely redone around 2014, 15. And so we're rewriting the whole front end now in React and in Ember. And that's going to make a big difference for us, because the product's obviously consumed in lots of different platforms now. You know, it's the web, it's native apps on Mac, and then it's native apps on mobile, on Android and iOS. And to be able to build stuff in React means that can be used on multiple different platforms, but feels native and it's the latest stuff. So that's obviously a really powerful way of leveraging like your dev team so they can have more impact.
Would you say that this is something that your dev team or your techies are very excited about?
Yeah. Oh, they love it. Yeah. Like, that's another thing as well. To keep people interested, they need to be working on the latest stuff. And if, as a company, if they're working on old stuff, you know, you're going to lose your best people, and you've got to give them a chance to relearn new stuff all the time. So it helps to, in terms of retention of staff as well, to be always doing that. And then also, like, if you're always working on new stuff, new ideas pop up as well, because people are challenging themselves and learning new stuff. They come back and they go, yeah, there's an amazing thing, we do that, we can do this here in a much quicker way. And at the moment, on the old way, it has to go through that because I built that old way, and now I can see it can be done much better here. Whereas if someone new comes along just writing it, they may not understand the old way or even go near some old part. Do you know what I mean? So it brings in fresh ideas, which leads to more innovation as well.
And in terms of, I suppose, I know we had mentioned a little bit about where you get your ideas from customers and for the product team. Is there anything you found particularly effective, I suppose, for innovating for your tech team or to kind of keep them, I suppose, on their toes in terms of tech?
Yeah, well, I would say this, like the product. So we work in there's a phrase, eat your own dog food.
Yes.
But like, that's very hard for us to do because we're not a salon, right? So we're making systems for a salon. So that works fine if you're doing some sort of business admin tool, like email tool or something, right, that you're going to use yourself. There's an awful lot of software companies that produce a tool for a different industry, right? And they're not that industry themselves. They're software companies. And in that case, you can't eat your own dog food. And so you need to do things to make sure that you're experiencing that. So things that we would do is, like, the product team, every single designer, product person, researcher, whatever, they all have to work in a salon as a receptionist for at least one day every quarter. Like, so that's transformative. Like, because when they go in and they come back, they just come back with all these ideas, and that needs to be changed, that needs to be done. And you've got people going out doing that all the time. So that would be something that's really important. And it can be really easy not to do that. Oh, we're too busy, let's not do that. And then 2 years go by and you've just, like, lost touch with what's happening. So that would be something really important that we do. And I would really strongly emphasize that for any product team that's building something that they wouldn't use themselves.
To be immersed in the industry that you're delivering to.
That's your way to eat your own dog food, basically, is by doing that. And then another one, around that is that's not just limited to the product team, so that the devs have to go out and do that as well. So the product team with the designers and everyone, but the devs need to do that at least once a year. Maybe not every quarter like the product team, but just to kind of, because they sometimes can get used to, well, sure, why wouldn't they just do it like this? Why are we having to do that? And then when they go out there and they actually experience what's going on, it can change their thinking big time. And a third thing we do is called empathy sessions. This is something that our research person has just recently introduced, which again, a really changes the way you think. And that's for everyone, including like the exec team and everyone like that. And an empathy session, if you don't know what it is basically, because I didn't until a few weeks ago, you come into a room and then three or four people, and we've six tasks that we have to do on the product. And so as we work through those tasks, in our case, we have the sound of a hairdryer turned on really loud, because that's what's actually happening in the thing. The phone is ringing all the time, and then our mobiles are being rung with bookings while we're trying to work through the tasks. And so we're actually, and the task can be quite complicated things that would happen in real life. So we're trying to manage actually what it's like to be in a salon. And that's totally different to, here's some things I just need to do in the quiet, you know, and I can just look at the screen and slowly work through them in my own time.
Something might seem very logical when it's very quiet. And
if you think about it, that's the way a lot of testing is done. Do you know, just work through those challenges. Do you know what I mean? Like, make see if the software works to do those things. When actually in real life, the hairdryer is going, someone's coming up, someone's complaining to you at the same time, you're trying to juggle all these things, someone's trying to pay at the same time, you're trying to book in this complicated appointment for someone on the phone who's asking for a refund. That's what the real life situation is.
So you're navigating the journey with lots of other things going on.
Yeah, you develop the empathy for what it's actually like. And the product can seem, in the quiet way, the product can seem fine. But in the real way, it's not, you know. So those are really, really good ways of understanding what it's like for the user.
My last question for you, Ronan, is in terms of kind of how far you've come. Mm. You started Forest really from your, I suppose, your college years, and you've built it up to a very successful business today. Would you say that you ever feel established as an entrepreneur or a startup founder, or is it still a bit scary sometimes, or do you still feel it's as ambitious today as it was when you started?
I definitely still feel like a startup, even though I shouldn't, because it's been 15 years, but it still does feel like a startup. And in software, it's a cool thing is that things are changing all the time. There's new things coming out. There's new software competitors coming out that are doing things differently. You've got to deal with that. And then also you've got to constantly reinvent the product and rewrite it. So there's always a new challenge that way. And there's also so much growth ahead. Like, we've 5,500 salons, there's 4 million. Like, we're not going to serve all of them, but there's large segments of that market we should be going after. So we're like at the tip of the iceberg of where it could go. And I still am as a bit ambitious to kind of go as far as I would have been 15 years ago, if not more so now, because I understand the potential, where I didn't really understand the potential before, I don't think.
Thanks a million, Ronan, for joining us on the 101 podcast.
Thanks, Roisin.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.